Holy crap, Janet.
Janet Prozewitz for Supreme Court.
Damn it, Janet, I love you.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin! Welcome to the 11 o'clock hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry, along with Jane Matinere. And one thing about civic media is that we have a weekly team meeting, as we're all spread out across the state, different stations, and the meeting every other week is while we are on air. So I checked the meeting notes yesterday, and I saw the first line item of the meeting was Rational Revolution. And I go, what the hell is that? And I pinged one of my teammates. I go, is this a new campaign we're doing, or what is Rational Revolution? And they said, no, it's a new show that's going to be on WGBW in Green Bay and WISS Air Support in Oshkosh with Kristen Alfine and Emily Cephos. And I was like, woo-hoo! I know them. And I was so excited. So I pinged both of you immediately. And I said, do you want to come on the show tomorrow to talk about your show that is starting on Thursday? So welcome to the show, ladies.
Why, thank you.
So just as a refresher, both of you have been on the show. I think, Emily, you've come on as a caller before. And Kristen, you've come on as a candidate before. But Kristen is a longtime federal advocate, current Appleton City Council member, and a former state Senate candidate. And Emily is a mom of three, former teacher, and community organizer. And now both of you can add radio show hosts to your resume. So how did this happen? How did you guys come up with the show? And how, like, it's starting. It's starting on Thursday.
I'm not sure we know the answer to that. We were in the midst of having a meeting on something in Outagamie County, and I'm not sure if it was Emily or I said, we should do a radio show. And Emily thought, well, that would be fun. And so I texted Sage Weil.
Our boss.
We are a big, you know, and, you know, what we hear in the community is that people just want to have civilized conversations again. We don't have to agree on everything, mm-hmm. but wouldn't it be nice to listen to one another and perhaps gain a bit of knowledge to add to what our beliefs are already? And that in itself is a great step forward for Wisconsin. Emily, what are your thoughts?
I mean, echoing that, I think also being in the Fox Valley, it's really like purple politically. Mm-hmm. So we've got like we've got people that experience legislation from the federal level and the state level in very different ways. And it's like about connecting the dots for us. It's about saying like, here's how it fits outside the door and how people in one of the like most back and forth areas in the state are experiencing it and what their like thoughts on all of the things that are happening are. So we're excited.
Obviously, I can speak to this after being on the air for a year. The show will change over time. But as far as what you're thinking right now, is it mostly going to be the two of you talking? Are you going to get guests on? Do you know what kind of topics you want to tackle? Like, for at least if you're mapping out the first month of shows, what does it look like?
Yeah, so our topics are going to be the topics that we all want to talk about. There's really no topic that's off topic. So whether it be healthcare, whether it be education, whether it be guns, whether it be inflation and the economy, every one of these, it could be housing. Every conversation we have, we want to talk about the perspective from multiple views. So the conversation will take place between the two of us. We will have guests from time to time, but we really are looking forward to having callers come in. We want to talk about, if you live in rural Wisconsin, what is your perspective of the situation? If you live in downtown Green Bay, what is your perspective? And if we can share those concepts from multiple views, we need to find what is reality in the situation beyond the banter of the discussion. So there's a never-ending pile of conversations that affect our kitchen tables on a daily basis that we never really get an in-depth conversation about on why it matters and why there may be differing sides of, you know, visions from it. I come from a background from rural Wisconsin. I grew up on a small town in Wisconsin. I then lived on a lake in the suburbs. I now live in downtown Appleton. So depending on where you live and what your vision of life looks like at the time, really adds a lens to how you feel about legislation. And we have to be able to talk about that so that we can see, again, civilized dialogue is our intent. So if we could give some empathy from different perspectives on a weekly basis, again, we should be able to add knowledge to one another. Therefore, we all go forward together.
We are talking to Kristen Elfheim and Emily Cephos, who are the new hosts of the new show, Rational Revolution, which is starting on Thursday and will be a weekly show across, not across civic media. It'll be on WGBW and WISS in Oshkosh and Green Bay from 7 to 8 p.m. And so in the conversation around trying to get multiple points of view, in your both of your roles right now as community organizers, do you feel like you have access to that range, or do you feel sometimes siloed in your work to hearing the same opinions again and again? Because I want to do the same thing on this show, but sometimes it's hard as far as I think who my leanings attract and who's attracted to my content, who's attracted to the show. And so trying to get more of a variety of guests and voices who call in, you know, we're siloed, right? And so do you guys have a plan, or do you feel like you already have enough people that can span that range to make their voices heard?
I was going to say that I think with your state senate campaign, you've definitely connected, and I think you were great about kind of reaching that squishy middle, we like to call it, of folks that are like not super far in either direction, that just are rational and pragmatic Wisconsinites. So I know that Kristen has a lot of networking that she's done, because she truly does care about the community members up here. And I also think, like, as far as the plan goes, what we're trying to do is like take those headlines and take those sound bites from either side, right? If Robin Voss says something, or Governor Evers says something, like, here's the headline, here's the quote, but what is the actual impact on Wisconsinites behind it on both sides? Because there's always going to be like an argument. So, I mean, I think we'll likely need to establish ourselves as being rational and fair, but we're hoping that will lead itself to, you know, allowing either the left or the right to come on and feel like they have a fighting chance as far as proving their point and sharing their opinions.
Yeah, and in my history, I spent the bulk of my time in politics on the federal level and in Madison, talking with both sides. I represented one group that was very much leaning towards the Democratic side and one that leaned towards the conservative side. So I had to learn over a decade ago how to be able to connect with both sides and find what we had in common. And that takes effort. But with that, you learn to have, you create that relationship and a trusted relationship that you can have a conversation with someone that you know you don't agree 100% with. And that's okay. I am very much a person that 50% of my friends are on the blue side and 50% are on the red side. And I get an awful lot of friends that are right there in the middle with me. So in my opinion on this show, we probably will tick off a lot of people because we're going to try very hard not to say this is the only answer and the right answer. We're going to try and say this is what people feel in the situation, and this is how it affects people. And then let people come to a conclusion that may lean them one side or the other, but we're not going to push them there. We're going to allow the conversation to take place. And that is the first thing we can do in terms of right.
I just hope that we can get back to the place in Wisconsin where compromise is not an evil, dirty word, because we can't get anything done otherwise.
Right. And you know what? It is okay to disagree. I have two very good friends. One is New York City liberal, and one is small town conservative Wisconsin. We could not be more different on a political path, and yet we are the best of friends. Imagine. Just imagine.
What do you guys talk about?
We talk about a lot of things, and there's a level where we hit a red line. We're like, and good, because we respect each other enough to say, we know we don't agree there. Let's just leave it be. And we go past it. Oh, my God, what a mature thought.
Well, that's what's so, we don't have enough time to go down that rabbit hole, but I always think that's interesting. It's like, once you hit that spot with someone and the choice of, is it productive to continue talking about this, even though we know we disagree, or do you step away from it for the sake of the relationship? And because I have a couple of those as well, where it's like, you know what? I don't need to be right on this, and I don't need for you to know that I'm right on this. So let's change the subject. Even though in my mind I am very right on this.
In a civilized conversation, if the other person is civilized, they will have listened to a couple of nuggets. And in that, and I will have listened as well. And so in that, we have helped each other to be a little bit better, a little bit more empathetic to what the other people feel. And that's our goal. And I think we can do that. And we should be doing that across the board. We're going to try really hard to just have great civic dialogue on what's going on and how it affects everybody's families in the Northeast Wisconsin area.
So with the couple minutes that we have left, tell us what's coming up on Thursday night.
Well, we've got that new Supreme Court justice that I believe today is being sworn in.
Yeah.
And so we're going to talk about what that means and what we're seeing as Wisconsin's future going forward when it comes to maps and potentially the abortion ban and things like that, and why, like, kind of the history behind it, because I think that a lot of times we don't understand the impact that gerrymandering has had and will continue to have and what the state might be facing. But, like, again, hitting it from both sides. Here's why what the argument was for doing it the way it was done. Here's, you know, the long and sordid tale of our maps. And then here's what might happen with a new liberal leaning Supreme Court in the state.
And we've got to be realistic about it. I would say that 50% of the population didn't give a crap about who was on the bill for the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. It's time we start paying attention. But we start by, again, not slapping them in the head by saying, shame on you, you didn't know better. But let's say, this is why it matters. Here's what's changed in the last 10 years because we didn't pay attention. And now let's move forward. Let's be more educated electorates so we can get out there and do what's right when the time comes for the best of the state.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Thursday, 7 p.m.
Get the Civic Media app.
Get the Civic Media app. So anyone listening who is not in the range of WISS air support, 1100 AM, 98.3 FM, or in WGBW's range, 97.9 FM, 1590 AM, you can still listen. So you can listen on either of those stations. You can listen to the Civic Media app. You can download it as a podcast. But Rational Revolution with Kristen Alfheim and Emily Cephos. Good luck, ladies. I can't wait to listen.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Civic Media family, and thanks for coming on today. Have a great day, and I'm sure we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye, Jane. See ya.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, ladies.
See ya.
All right. When we come back, Kirsten Finn is going to talk about the ride across Wisconsin, and I'm curious to know, does that mean superior to Milwaukee? That feels very long. All right. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. And speaking of bicycles, over the weekend, River West 24 happened.
Oh, it did.
And if you're not familiar, it's the people's holiday. It's one of the best events, I think, ever in Milwaukee. It's completely volunteer run, and it is a 24-hour bicycle. It's not even a race. It's just...
Let's go ride our bikes.
It's ride your bikes. You complete laps, but there's also challenges, one of which is getting a tattoo that gives you laps. But it is just the neighborhood of River West in Milwaukee comes alive, and it is...
That's cool.
It's very bike heavy, but also bike heavy is the ride across Wisconsin. And so here to tell us a little bit more about what that looks like is Kirsten Finn, who's the executive director of the Wisconsin Bike Fed. Welcome to the show, Kirsten. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. So before we jump into the details of the race itself, remind people what the Wisconsin Bike Fed is.
Sure. The Wisconsin Bike Fed is our state's statewide advocacy organization, and we serve the state in three ways. We educate people on how to ride their bikes safely. We advocate for federal funds to be spent on bike paths, protected bike lanes, and things like multi-use paths for people to run or walk their dogs or ride their bikes. And then we produce awesome events that promote bike tourism in Wisconsin, like Ride Across Wisconsin.
Amazing. So Ride Across Wisconsin makes me think that this is like superior to Milwaukee, which is it that far? Or what is the route for across Wisconsin?
Yeah, so we change the route every 3 years so
okay.
that people can see more of the state. And so we are in year two of the route that is La Crosse to Milwaukee. So you start at the Mississippi River in La Crosse, and then you end at Lake Michigan.
Jane's face just looks tired without even...
Wowza. I mean, what a beautiful place to start.
Yeah.
To start in La Crosse, because it's so gorgeous. But I mean, Kirsten, for somebody like me, that would take a month.
Well, it's a big undertaking. It's 235 total miles. And we have, I would say, a third of the people try it in one day. And
wow.
The rest, do it in 2 days. Yeah.
2 days.
Yeah,
so that's
it's a big run.
So what is the expertise level of the average person who rides in this race?
Well, obviously you need to train for it, and
yeah.
We provide a training schedule to get you ready. But to include more folks, you know, this year for the first time we have people who can participate in as little as 11 miles. We have a family fun ride that is on the Elroy Sparta Trail. It starts in Sparta and goes to Norwalk, and you can go 11 miles one way and take a shuttle back, or you can do 22-mile loop. And then another popular option, a lot of folks ride just from La Crosse to the Wisconsin Dells and then get a shuttle back to La Crosse. So we try to make sure that as many people can participate as want to, but I know that for a lot of really passionate cyclists, they're really looking for a challenge like crossing the entire state by bike. So we like to provide that option as well.
Kirsten, how many if you do the whole thing in 2 days from La Crosse to Milwaukee, how many miles are they averaging in a day?
So you do 100 miles on the first day from Milwaukee to Wisconsin Dells. And because it is Wisconsin, we have a big party in the Dells.
Nice.
And then the second day is 135 miles from the Dells to Milwaukee. And some folks choose to ride from the Dells to the Trek bicycle headquarters in Waterloo, Wisconsin, which is 165 miles. So we also have a big party with beer there. And then we're ending this year at American Family Field with a big tailgate there. So we are celebrating people who are riding all different mileage.
And so far, how many people are signed up to do the full race? The full ride?
So far, we have 710 people participating so far.
Wow! That's really impressive.
Where do they sleep in the Dells? Is it hotels or do they camp?
They some of both.
Okay.
Our midpoint in the Dells is Mirror Lake State Park. We have a wonderful partnership with the Department of Natural Resources. And this year, we're offering a lot of options for people who bring their families along. So we have nature activities for kids, like hikes. And we have like a word search or a bingo game, a car bingo game for kids who are kind of on a road trip along with their parents. But then we do have a lot of folks that stay in water parks, and we also have partner hotels in all of the communities we go through. So, you know, one of the things that we're really trying to do is promote Wisconsin as a great place to come for a family vacation and for a great place to come on a bicycling vacation. So we've gotten support from Visit Milwaukee, from the Dells, and also from Travel Wisconsin. So we're really trying to encourage folks to give. We know how awesome it is to ride in Wisconsin. There's just nowhere more beautiful than Wisconsin country roads. But we just want to make sure that the rest of the country knows about it as well.
Absolutely. And so it's happening on August 19th and the 20th. And so for people
Correct.
Who are... Is it too late, do you think, for the average person, as long as they've been training, to still sign up and do the whole race? Or
no,
is
not
that at all? Okay.
Anyone could still sign up, because you could do 11 miles today, no matter who you are. So it is absolutely not too late to sign up. You would do that at rideacrosswisconsin.com. And our website lays out all of the different options.
Absolutely. Rideacrosswisconsin.com, August 19th. Through the 20th. Anything else people should know before we let you go?
No, it just, you know, if you see riders coming through your community, please cheer them on. They're working hard, and we just want to make sure that everyone feels welcome.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Kirsten Finn is the executive director of the Wisconsin Bike Fed, and go check out rideacrosswisconsin.com if you either want
11 miles. I could do 11
miles. If you either want to participate or you want to see the route and cheer them on, but this is an awesome event to go support in one way or another. Thanks so much for joining us, Kirsten.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. All right. Well, when we come back, physics professor at Lawrence University, Megan Pickett, is here to tell us about Elda Anderson. You probably have never heard of, but she is a was a hidden figure on the Manhattan Project, which is timely with the Oppenheimer movie out. So we will talk to her on the other side of the break. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Start a reaction that can't be contained. Balance your pH by sharing my base. I'll be your star if you'll be my space. Cause there is no distance that I wouldn't go. Through space-time and wormholes, my matter would flow to the edge of the universe.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. What song were we just listening to?
That's a science love song.
Science love song.
Science love song by ASAP Science.
There we go. Yeah. All right. Well, just a reminder, in the next segment, we are going to be giving away 2 to 4 more tickets for the state fair.
You so can't lose.
If you would like to win those, because you can't lose, get ready to call in at 1150-844-967-2789. We will play our fun game about food, state fair food. So we will be playing that in the next segment. But for this segment, so I did see Barbie over the weekend. Still want to talk about that tomorrow. But I have yet to see Oppenheimer. But that is the other movie, obviously, driving so many people to the theaters right now. It's Christopher Nolan's new film about the Manhattan Project during World War II that led to the creation of nuclear weapons. And then yesterday, I saw an article in Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about a Wisconsin woman who worked on the Manhattan Project, but is not a character in Oppenheimer, and someone I had never heard of. So I'm so excited to talk to our next guest. Megan Pickett is a Lawrence University professor of physics, and she's currently researching the life of Elda Anderson, who is Wisconsin's Marie Curie. Welcome to the show, Megan.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so this is, I love stories like this, as far as just
hidden figures.
The hidden figures of history that are often women. Mm-hmm. But I guess to just get started, who was Elda Anderson?
That's a great question because, so she was a Wisconsin born and bred physicist. She was born in 1899 in Green Lake, and, she went to college at Ripon and at Madison, and then eventually, became a physics professor at Milwaukee Downer College. And in fact, she was the first woman to earn tenure in physics at Milwaukee Downer College. And then a few decades later, Milwaukee Downer College merged with Lawrence College to make Lawrence University, which is where I teach. So Elda was fascinated with fundamental physics. Her main interest in physics was trying to tease out the structure of matter. And that's what she did her dissertation on. In Madison, by looking at the light of calcium and nickel and being able to map out the structure of those atoms, her exactingly precise work, which again is done without computers, mm-hmm. done by hand, got her the attention of the War Department in Princeton. So she was recruited to Princeton in the early 40s. And then while she was at Princeton, she was one of the first people that was recruited to the Manhattan Project. The Manhattan Project was a series of different labs. We often think of the Manhattan Project and think of Los Alamos. Los Alamos is technically what they call Project Y. They had a couple of labs in Hanford and in Oak Ridge to make the fuel. They had a place in Chicago, a place in Princeton. But Los Alamos is where they built the bomb.
Yeah.
And her job there was to analyze the light and figure out how likely was it that you could split apart the uranium fuel to make the bomb work. So she was, without her work, without what she did and how she did it, the bomb wouldn't have worked. So she was there. She was there for the Trinity test. She stayed about another year after that. And then when she came back to Wisconsin, she only stayed at Milwaukee Downer for another year or two before being offered a position at Oak Ridge Lab, where she helped create a brand new branch of physics called health physics, which looked at the impact of radiation on human beings, health, and how do you interact safely with radiation. And that's what she worked on the remainder of her career until she died in 1961 of cancer, possibly due to her war research. Nobody's ever heard of her.
Yeah.
And she was well known. She was well known at the time, and she kind of slipped into obscurity.
Megan, do we know much about her childhood? Did she come from a scientific family? She must have been a unicorn among physicists at that time.
She was. So her family history is kind of interesting. She was the second of three children. She had an older sister, a younger brother. Brother died in a car crash. But early in her childhood, there was a big scandal. Her father kind of ran off with the local doctor's wife. And so she was on her own with her mom and her siblings, and she excelled in math and was encouraged to study math and Latin and physics at Ripon College. And it turned out that she was so good that they held her on to help do some of the teaching while she was there. And then after she graduated in 22, she went to Iowa for a job at a junior college. They didn't have science departments or science divisions. So at the age of, I think she was 24, she created the science division at this junior college and became its first dean. And I think of what I was doing when I was 24. I was not the dean of science.
You weren't starting academic divisions at schools.
No. But then after that, she came back to the Fox Valley and was principal at Menasha High School for a couple of years before she then joined the faculty at Milwaukee Downer College. And that's where I first learned of her. When I earned tenure in 2010, and the archivist here told me I was the first woman to earn tenure in physics at Lawrence in our 175-year history. And then she said, but if you include Milwaukee Downer College, you're the second. First one is Elba. And there's just no monument, no buildings or anything named after her. So that's really what drove me to start researching her life.
So what has that process been like? Because you're a physicist. You teach physics, mm-hmm. which is science. And now you are on a... Yeah. historical research journey that is like, hopefully, I think from what I got from the article is like, you're going to publish a biography on her. So how different is this from the research you're used to doing?
Oh, it's so different. Cause I mean, so I'm a theoretical astrophysicist, so I don't normally deal with people. I simulate how solar systems form. And so this is a very different kind of research. Unfortunately, I have a collaborator, Kim Keffert, who's a professor at University of Michigan, and who has won. There's an annual award in Elba's name for health physics, and she's a previous winner of that award. So she's been working on this separately. She heard of, I gave a talk about Elba a few years ago. She heard about that. We've gotten together. And so we're sharing notes and materials, and it is a very much a different process where I'm learning how to submit Freedom of Information Act requests, how to do interviews. And then, I mean, the nice thing about it is that it's also kind of reflective. I think about my own career. Kim thinks about her own career. We think about our own connections to this wonderful woman who's been forgotten. And yet contributed so much to two different fields in physics, and then who died so really so young.
We're talking to Megan Pickett, who is a professor of physics at Lawrence University, about her research about Elda Anderson, who worked on the Manhattan Project, was from Wisconsin, And also just not a lot of people know about her. I'm so happy that the Journal Sentinel wrote about this, so now that I know about her. But it's interesting because, of course, that term Hidden Figures, you think about the movie. You think about the movie that came out about the women who worked on at the space program at NASA. And it's interesting, like, in your research about Elda, is there other women that have popped up? Like, it's hard not to imagine how many of these figures exist that contributed and worked on projects and kept their head down. And unless you're searching for it, like, you don't know who they were.
Right. Yeah. So I have. And some of the women that I've come across, I've heard of before. So there are Lisa Meitner's work and Irene Joliet Curie's work. They weren't technically part of the project, but their work led to the developments in the project. The Manhattan Project had about 600 women working in different parts of the project. Most of them were in what was called, especially at Los Alamos, were part of the Calutron, which is such an old way that women used to work in sciences. They were human computers. In the history of astronomy, there's a tradition of human computers. That these were women who did the jobs, the tedious, long classification jobs that male scientists didn't want because it didn't pay well and was a lot of work, and it wasn't very flashy. And so there was a group of women that were essentially doing all of the calculations at Project Y. But at Project Y itself, probably about a dozen actual women who were scientists. Of those, Elda was the oldest. She was older than most people. The average age at Project Y was something like 25. But she was 44 when she arrived. Oppenheimer celebrated his 40th birthday while they were there. And being older then meant that she was more or less in charge of the women. She sort of ran the women's dormitory and was kind of a mother figure, which is what she was like at Milwaukee Downer. Huh. But there were certainly other women that were involved. And in fact, there's a woman engineer that worked on the construction of the gadget, the actual test bomb that was loaded up onto the frame for the Trinity test. But it was there were women that were part of the project, but very few of their stories are told. They're starting to be told now, but it's sort of drips and drabs.
Yeah.
Hey, Christopher Nolan, if you're listening, this is your next movie.
Well, that's what I was just thinking. Yeah. It was like the real Barbenheimer would have been a movie about the women, because I think there was, my mom read a book, I think, called The Girls of Atomic City, which I think it's similar to what you were just talking about, right? She said it was a fascinating book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in fact, in Oppenheimer, Christopher Nolan, there's one woman character in the at Los Alamos who shows up, and there's just a brief scene where she doesn't know where to go, and she asks Oppenheimer, and Oppenheimer asks her, how fast can she type? And she says, I don't know, I'm a nuclear physicist. And so she represents that one person, and I don't think she even has a name, represents all the women that were at Manhattan Project. It was a cheap, kind of a quick way to include them in. And, you know, I get it. I really liked Oppenheimer.
You liked the movie?
I loved it. Okay. I thought the science and the politics of it were great. And it was a study of Oppenheimer. It wasn't supposed to be this big expansive thing of the entire project. So I get that. I would love to see a movie about the women that worked on the Manhattan Project. Yeah.
Maybe it'll be based off of your pending biography on Elda Anderson.
Sure.
Get those royalties. Professor Megan Pickett, thank you so much. This was fascinating to learn about, and I can't wait to find once this is published and out there. It's so interesting.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Have a great day. All right. When we come back, we will give away those State Fair tickets. So if you would like to go to the State Fair for free, 844-967-2789. You can't lose. You just have to play 844-96-PARTY. We'll be back in a minute.
Because the heart doesn't feel when it comes to love, the brain seals the deal. This is your science love song. A place to start our chemical bond. A research endeavor. The conclusion together.
French annotations of bibliography.
Because you matter.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinera. And just to wrap up and put a little bow on.
That was so interesting.
So interesting. You know, previous Miss Wisconsin, who is currently Miss America.
Is a physicist.
Is like a blonde, beautiful young woman who is also a nuclear physicist.
It's mind-boggling.
And so she is, she made the connection. I think she threw it out there. I was like, does any marketing team want to talk to me about this Barbenheimer thing? All right. Well, talking about maybe as a Wisconsin, maybe she'll show up to the Wisconsin State Fair.
That'd be great.
But we do have a new Miss Wisconsin, so she may have other obligations. But it's time to win some State Fair tickets. Who do we have playing?
Penny from Plainfield is joining us. Good morning, Penny. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm totally excited.
Good. We love having some enthusiasm. So I'll just remind you of the rules of the game. So I'm going to read off three different types of food that are new to the State Fair this year. You get to pick one that you're going to eat the entire thing at least once, one that you're going to eat every day for the rest of your life, and one you're never going to eat and you're going to banish to hell. Are you ready, Penny?
Absolutely.
All right. Number one. Cotton candy jerky, a new twist on a favorite fair food. Cotton candy jerky is an old-fashioned beef jerky flavored like cotton candy. This sweet, salty jerky is sure to please fairgoers of all ages. I don't even know what that would, I can't even imagine what that tastes like and feels like in your mouth.
Bad. Sounds bad.
All right, number two. Flamin' Hot Cheetos chocolate bark. With the Flamin' Hot Cheetos chocolate bark, you won't be able to stop at just one bite. Mix Flamin' Hot Cheetos into rich milk chocolate to create the best tasting spicy snack at the State Fair.
If it was dark chocolate,
maybe they'd sell you?
Maybe they could sell me, but I don't know about that.
All right, and the last one is pretty straightforward, Penny. Deep-fried garlic gator toes.
Oh.
Get your gator toes deep-fried and flavored like garlic.
Oh, boy.
All right. I'll give you a second to think, but then what is going to be your option to eat the entire thing?
Well, compared to my choices, I guess I'd do the cotton candy jerky.
Okay.
Eat it once and get it out of the
get
way.
Get it out of the way.
Correct.
What do you want to eat every day for the rest of your life?
I will do the chocolate Cheetos.
Ooh, do you like Flamin' Hot Cheetos normally on their own?
Here and there. I like them. They don't like me.
They don't agree with the digestive tract, but my taste buds, good to go. All right. So that means you have no interest in deep fried gator toes?
No, it doesn't even sound interesting. And, you know, that's. No, thank you.
I'm also confused. I feel like when you think of an alligator's foot, there wouldn't be a lot of meat on your toes.
That's the exact thought I had.
Like, it seems like a lot of bone and not a lot of chewy fat things that would taste good, even deep fried. So I agree with you. Well, I think that was a good thing. Go ahead, Betty.
If you go try them, you let me know, okay?
Okay. Well, I am deciding. I was like, when I go, now that we've been playing this game with callers, it's like, all right, when I go, what is going to be my top, like, five things?
Because you're going to do a TikTok.
Because I'm going to do a TikTok and just, like, rank the things that I've... But I was like, there's so many, and there's so many weird ones that I'm like, how do I even choose which ones I'm going to actually spend my own money to
subject myself to.
Again, I wish they would have a sampler day.
I know.
Where you could just get a small taste of the weird things instead of having to get an entire portion of gator toes. But maybe next year.
Pitch that
yeah,
pitch that
you
idea
then. 10 toes.
You don't want 10 toes.
You need the one.
Penny, what is your other favorite thing to do at the fair?
Oh, I love going to the animal barns and yeah. everything. You know, I'm a little up there in age where I can't do the rides much anymore. So
I mean, I can't. I'm not that up there in the age, and I think I'm beyond doing the rides as well.
You gotta go to the tent where they have the dogs doing the agility stuff. It is the most. It's so much fun. It's so much fun to watch, and it's just pure joy. It's just joyful.
Absolutely. You know what else I remember? Shearing the sheep. And how good they are. The people who shear the sheep and how good they are.
They're fast.
And how fast they are and stuff. That's always really fun to watch, too. All right. Well, Penny, thank you for listening and thank you for playing. Have so much fun.
Don't hang up.
Jane's going to get your information.
I really enjoy your show.
Oh, thank you. We love that you enjoy it. All right. Well, that'll. We still got a couple minutes left for today. But that was a really fun show.
It just flew by. And if you missed the interview that we just did with Megan Pickett, go back to the podcast and take a listen, because it's a Hidden Figures movie in and of itself.
It's so interesting.
It really is. And it just shows, I guess, how important women were always in the creation of so many things. And it only takes, you know, 75 years for them to get any credit.
But you know, it was also what I was thinking, flashback to our show on Friday with Maggie Dawn, of who writes the history books, who tells the stories, because there are so many stories to tell. And I think about a friend of mine who, she moved to Savannah, Georgia a couple years back now, and upon moving there, she went on some history tour, because it's a city that has a lot of history.
It's supposed to be a beautiful city.
And she found out all the information about, you know, the rich history of the woman who started Girl Scouts.
Oh.
And not only just the history of her starting Girl Scouts, but she herself has this incredible story as far as her marriage and her divorce and all of this stuff. And so now she's a writer, but she's writing her biography and like she's been working on it. But I just think about like the dominance of Girl Scouts still has today, as you know, every once a year, we're all very excited to get our Girl Scout cookie order. And yet even her story hasn't necessarily been told, despite the fact that it's fascinating.
Well, there's got to be someone who's willing to take it on. And as Megan just said, too, filing FOIA requests and tracking all this stuff down and finding, you know, who's still alive that I could talk to about this. It's a big undertaking.
That is not her main job.
Right.
Her main job is to teach, be a tenured professor of physics at Lawrence University. But let's take on this other project that is totally outside of my research and experience.
I got so much time.
And so certainly go back. And as always, if you ever miss any part of our show, you can always go back and listen to it as a podcast, which you can find wherever you find podcasts or on asgoeswisconsin.com/listen. Of course, you can download the app, so you can always take us with you. You can also text us and call us from there.
More state fair tickets tomorrow.
Two times. We got two more times for tomorrow to give away state fair tickets. And then I'm going to Vegas after tomorrow's show, which I made a joke yesterday saying it's Mike's 40th birthday, and his present is that I'm going to tolerate the heat and his debauchery in Vegas at 7.5 months pregnant.
Oh, so much fun.
So much fun. All right, we'll come back tomorrow. We'll do this all over again. This has been As Goes Wisconsin.
State Fair is a great state fair. Don't miss it. Don't even be late. It's dollars to donuts that our state fair is the best state fair in our state.